Welcome back, Nerdtween faithful. This is your host, Nerdpool Prime. Today we are going to be doing a deep dive of the Loki season premiere episode, Glorious Purpose. But first, before I go into that, I want to, first of all, say thank you for joining me today. But I would like to also remind you that I'm doing a live auction tonight on the Whatnot app. It's going to be at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's going to be a lot of great keys and first appearances and a whole bunch of great stuff and maybe even a Loki Time Variance Authority key being thrown in there as well. You never know. So you're definitely going to want to come check that out. My name is Nerdtween on the Whatnot app. Now, that disclaimer being said, I want to first and foremost say that this episode is going to be littered with a whole bunch of spoilers. So if you haven't already seen the first episode of Disney Plus original series, Loki, titled Glorious Purpose, you might want to back out now. By the time this episode airs, the Nerdtween 48-hour spoiler ban will have already been lifted, so feel free to comment your thoughts below if I missed something or if you disagree with any of my findings. Also, if you're watching this on YouTube, listening to it on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or just about anywhere you get your podcasts, please like, subscribe, share it to Facebook, Twitter, or wherever you share all your stuff so all your other nerdy friends can find out what great stuff you're listening to. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much. So, now that all that is out of the way and the warning has been given, let's get into the Nerdtween breakdown of Loki, Episode 1, Glorious Purpose. This episode opens up with a clip from Avengers Endgame with extra reactions from Tom Hiddleston sprinkled through, like the wave in the elevator or his reaction to the commotion that led to him getting the Tesseract and starting down this rabbit hole that led him to the TVA. But more on that in a little bit. Hiddleston displays his talent as an actor, being able to convey emotions with just eyebrows and his eyes. That raised eyebrow, wide, shifty eye face just said so much. But moving on. As Loki escapes with the Tesseract, it fades to black and we can hear Chris Hemsworth saying, "Where's Loki?" Like he did in the Avengers Endgame when the time heist went bad. Followed by a truly epic opening song by, from what I was able to find, Natalie Holt. If I'm wrong, please correct me. And Natalie, if it is you who did this, thank you. You knocked it out the park. Followed by a very Loki-style Marvel logo. We cut back to a wide shot of the Gobi Desert in Mongolia. Now, I can't for the life of me figure out what the significance of all these places are in the show. This one may be the least significant. Like, Loki could have just thought of a safe place far away from the Avengers, and the Tesseract said, okay, fall from the sky into the Gobi Desert. If anyone can figure out what the significance of these different places are, please, please let me know, because it's killing me! But more on that later. I did love the parallel to Iron Man when Tony escapes his captors and ends up crashing hard into the desert, you know, his suit and debris all over the place. Loki even had to take off his Asgardian mouthpiece, that kinky little toy that Thor put on him, just like Tony did when he had to take off his mask. It's a truly fitting parallel if you think about it, because Iron Man pretty much started the MCU as we know it, and this Loki series is going to change everything and kind of start the MCU down a whole brave new path. The implications of this show will be far-reaching through the MCU for years to come, but more on that later. Moving on. When the Mongolian villagers from a nearby village walk up on Loki for the first time, the first thing he does is run to jump onto a rock so he'll be looking down on them. And I'll get more into this later, but think about for a second, for all intents and purposes, this man is a god, and he sees five regular, unarmed humans, and his first instinct is to try to get to the high ground, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, to impose his dominance. Why would a god do that? But more on that later. He delivers his patented Loki greeting, "I am Loki of Asgard. I am burdened with glorious purpose." And I really love how the villagers like have no idea who the hell he is and don't seem to fear him at all. Like, Loki definitely did not like that. Then enters the TVA through doors that seem to be able to transport the TVA agents and the hunters to anywhere through space and time. Again, just think of the implications of that. I bet they were watching when Tony was figuring out time travel. And he was like, oh, let's do a Mobius strip. And I bet they all turned to look at Mobius. Mobius M. Mobius, who is being played by Owen Wilson. And I want to take a second just to say how grateful I am for this cast. I mean, the talent here is just outstanding. But more on that in a second. We are then introduced to Hunter B-15, played by, and I'm sure I'm going to mess this up, and I apologize, Wunmi Mosaka, who I love from Lovecraft Country. That now makes two actors that I know for sure are coming from Lovecraft Country over to the MCU. You have Mosaka joining Jonathan Majors, who has already been cast as Kang the Conqueror in Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. But I digress. Moving on. She says, it seems like this is just a standard sequence violation. Now, I'll get into this more in a second, but there's absolutely nothing standard about this sequence violation, okay? Just for the record, this is Loki we're talking about. She calls Loki a variant, and that appears to be the term that the MCU has given to alternate versions, alternate reality versions of people in the MCU. Because remember, our Loki died at the hands of Thanos in the opening scenes of Avengers Infinity War. So, Loki, of course, does not comply, and she hits him with this time staff. I don't know what else what they're calling it, but I'm calling it a time staff. So when she hits Loki, she tells him that he's moving at 1/16th speed, but feeling everything in real time. So imagine the pain it would have felt to be hit across the face with basically a police baton on steroids, but experiencing the pain of the initial hit for an extended period of time. Because I don't know if anyone's listening here has been hit in the face, but I sure have. That the pain's like dims down after a little bit, but that initial smack really hurts. And just to imagine that extended, sends shivers down my spine. Again, just think about the implications of a weapon like that. And think of this is a standard weapon that is even more powerful than this. And we'll get into that shortly. So she puts on this collar, which I initially thought was like a power dampening collar that that they used with Wanda in Captain America Civil War when she was arrested and put on the raft. Or like you've seen in many, like in Deadpool, where his powers were dampened by that neck collar. But more on that later. And like I said, moving on. Now, when they put the reset charge, we don't get to see much. And it's really funny because I was very much like Loki, because if you saw, he was staring, like trying to like look around and see it. But as much as I could tell, it kind of looks like, I would say, celestial energy. And we find out later that actually erases that variant timeline after that Nexus event. But more on that later. We get our first look at the TVA. To me, it looks like a retro command center from like a 1970s police drama. But with insane technology or magic, it hasn't really been explained. I think there could be like advanced godlike magic. That would like work similar to the runes that were displayed in WandaVision. Like it could be the whole place is surrounded in magic, and there's only people who are permitted to use magic can use magic. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's happening, but we really don't know at this point. And what I've said about this series so far, I don't know what to expect. And for me, that's a blessing, because usually I can kind of predict what's going to happen. I have no idea where this series is going, and that's awesome. So when we go into the TVA, you can see a variant skull being booked. Then there's a random, like, what appears to be just like white privileged human talking about his dad on the board of Goldman Sachs. His name is Martin, and he's played by Josh Fadham. Then Loki tries to run away. As I said in my Loki preview special last week, he runs away, and then they use what we later find out is called a time twister to bring him back to where he was next to Hunter B-15. He did have to try a second time because it's Loki, and he just had to make sure. Then more on that random guy in a minute. We are introduced to someone who just steals every single scene he's in, Casey, played by Eugene Cordero. He's been in a bunch of stuff over the years, like Kong Skull Island. He was in The Mandalorian. And he's one of my favorite characters in The Good Place. Speaking of The Good Place, random droplet of Nerdtween news will be sprinkled in here. There is a rumored, confirmed, I haven't seen Marvel confirm it yet, casting of former The Good Place co-star Jamila Jamil, who played Tahini as the main villain for the She-Hulk show Titania, who is first appeared in Secret Wars number 3, 1984. But I digress. So, Casey, his character is just absolutely the best. He gets told to, rather aggressively, I might add, into log the Tesseract into evidence, and when he does, he asks, "What is it?" And then when Loki responds, "It's the Tesseract, be careful," you can hear him respond, "Sounds dumb." And, I mean, let's be honest, with what we'll see in a little bit, what we'll go over in a little bit, that's a very fitting response. I mean, like I said, we'll talk about that in a second, but he's not wrong here. B-15 brings him to an elevator door with this very retro design handle mechanism. The TVA design has a very old-school, retro-looking tech feel to it that somehow has technology that is more impressive than any in known existence. Then Loki, of course, being Loki, threatens B-15, saying there will be a deadly consequence for him crossing her. And she responds with a smirk and says, "We'll see." If you ask me, that is 100% foreshadowing. I bet later in the series, even after she's tough on him or even mean to him, he'll have a choice to either save her or let her die. And he will choose to save her, solidifying his unlikely hero status. When the door closes, Loki is in there with a hibernating robot. Even this advanced robot looks old school, and when the face, it's like very old school digital, and it glitches. So it's not very doesn't look very impressive. It starts trying to take off Loki's armor, and then Loki he literally slaps the armor of the robot away, saying, "This is fine as Guardian leather," as opposed to crappy as Guardian leather. Moving on. The robot then uses some laser type tool to just, for lack of a better term, burn off Loki's clothes. And I can see it now. Oh, the memes. You know that like, I watched this for the plot, so it's going to be like, yeah, I watched Loki for the plot, and then it's Loki naked. I don't know if they're actively trying, or it just seems to happen, but all these Disney Plus shows have been unbelievably memeable, and I kind of love that. You can see the first time fear in Loki's eyes when he realizes he's just totally naked. He says, "Now hang on just a minute. Did you notice that slight stutter before he said now? It was like he was going to say just hang on a minute. And now hang on a minute." Another fantastic little bit of acting on the part of Tom Hiddleston. I mean, he's destroying it. He's killing it. We're going to have another candidate, new hashtag Tom Hiddleston Emmy Award nominee. So he falls through the trapdoor and somehow is now clothed in a TVA jumpsuit that we saw in that first early trailer. Loki is startled to see the clerk who's just sitting there, as well as the cat was startled to see Loki, as if the cat didn't know it was going to happen. I mean, I feel like that'd be a continuous thing. The cat wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, some have postulated that maybe that cat is a Flurkin, like Gus from the Captain Marvel movie. But I think it's just a cat. I think it's just some lonely guy with a cat. Now, the paperwork clerk, as he is listed on IMDb, played by Jon Levine, he just crushes it. Like, everyone in this, seriously... You don't often see, ancillary and tertiary characters that are just scene stealers. And just every single supporting character in this show is just fantastic. He just plays this emotionless paper pusher. And I don't think people realize how hard it could be sometimes to show no emotion. I mean, seriously, if you haven't acted and you've never tried to not react to someone, especially if they're doing something funny, that scene is one of the funnier ones in the episode where Loki has like all these facial expressions, and the paperwork clerk, Levine, just stares at him and is like, sign this too. I mean, it's really impressive, truly. Pardon me while I take a swig of my tasty beverage. All right. And Loki says, what? Loki goes, what? And another paper prints. He says, this is absurd. And sign this too. If you look at that stack, I actually believe that is a relatively small pile of papers for the entire documentation of Loki's spoken word. I mean, if Thor's 1,500 years old, Loki would have to be close to that. That pile of paper should be almost endless. I mean, think about it. Every damn time this dude introduces himself, he says at least 12 words. As Mobius will point out later in the episode, Loki loves to talk. So, talky, as do I. But I digress. Moving on. Loki reluctantly yet aggressively signs his name before he falls again. And I love how when he fell this time, he kind of just like, he looks up at the trapdoor and points at it like, you better not try that again. It already won, dude. He lost. Soon enough, he will learn just how powerless he is, but more on that in a minute. So let's talk about the robot scanner and the scanner clerk. Aaron Bielner, who was just so great here, like, please confirm to your knowledge that you are not a fully robotic being or born an organic creature and do in fact possess what many cultures would call a soul. And like, Loki's like, what? Like, think about like being asked that question. Like, it's not something that you would ever expect to be asked. Are you a robot? And Loki has a great response. Like, do a lot of people not know they're robots? And now let's pause and talk about this. Why would they be scanning for robots? I first thought maybe they've encountered something like a Doombot, or potentially they might have Kang have robots through the time stream, even though in the comics he just has multiple versions of himself spread out across all cosmos and time and space. And then when Loki asks what would happen, he says that it will melt you from the inside out. And then, so why is it so important that robots don't get in there? I feel like that's something important later, but I don't know exactly what. So the machine, of course, doesn't kill him because he's not a robot. And it scans for temporal auras, which I'm guessing is for tracking and record purposes, considering the fact that where he's going right now, we talk about later, Mobius has intervened, he would get reset and erased from the time stream. Erased from the multiverse, I guess? But moving on. The interchange between Bielner and Hiddleston is just genius. The way they both play off each other was just fantastic. And like when he was like, he tried to hustle along, he's like, move along, sir. It felt like a reaction, and I don't know if I can even find this out, but I feel like that part may not have been scripted. I feel like he, in the moment, decided to take that. I guess we'll try to see if we can maybe get an interview with him and find out. Wishful thinking. All the Marvel Disney Plus shows have proven, without a question in my mind, that the MCU is real cinema, and I don't care what Martin Scorsese says. Moving on. If you look close on the inside of the scanner, it definitely looks like there's some type of stain, probably blood or something along those lines. I'm guessing from machines that were melted out from the inside. We see that Loki's temporal aura has a few different colors, with what looks like red, like melding into yellow and then to blue. I bet that comes into play later. I'm guessing Loki's have a similar spectral aura. I would assume that they're, because even though they're variants, I bet you the main color might stay the same. And that's how they can tell which variants are what. But we'll see. So the framing of these shots in the DMV-style TVA waiting room really gives that depth of feel, that there's that emptiness and hopelessness. There's this long line of just lines, and there's no one there, and there's only two people, and they're still having to go walk through this maze of lines. And they even comment on it. Like, there's only two of us here. Like, what's the big deal about getting a ticket? But, I mean, like I said, the only people in the room are, besides the TVA people, are Martin and Loki. And they both are told to take a number. Of course, Martin refuses because, you know, white privilege. But more on that in a second. Loki says, "This is a mistake. I shouldn't even be here." I don't know. That was a pretty bad one. I think my accent's been pretty good up until that point. Which gives me a major Kevin Smith's Clark vibe. "I'm not even supposed to be here today." Definitely gives me that kind of vibe. But anyways, he hears over a loudspeaker the echoing of basically that thought by a mysterious voice, Miss Minutes, a kind of mascot in a commercial for the TVA that is playing in the waiting room. Miss Minutes is voiced by the legendary voice actress Tara Strong. She has voiced many roles all throughout nerddom. She did Barbara Gordon in the animated movie Batman the Killing Joke, Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls, Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents, Ben 10, and Harley Quinn, and the list just goes on. So she explains what the Time Variance Authority does, and man, what she says literally, and I'm not misusing that at all, changes the way we have to look at the entire MCU. Now, this next little bit might not be safe for work around small children because I'm going to go full-on nerd out, and I may curse. I may get so excited that a curse word slips out. So just keep that in mind if you're listening to this at work. You might want to turn it down just a little bit just in case you have to pause it. Like I said, I've told everyone I script all my episodes, and I don't have a curse word scripted in, but I can't guarantee it's not going to come out because what I'm going to talk about is so exciting. So she says, okay, hold on, let me compose myself. She says, "There was a vast multiversal war, countless unique timelines battled each other for supremacy, nearly resulting in total destruction of, well, everything." I'm sorry, what did you just say? Are you freaking kidding me? You said multiversal war? So for those of you who cannot sense the disturbance in the nerd force, this is beyond huge to me. This is them referencing a Secret War style event. I mean, it's not so much like the original Secret Wars, because that was just, you know, someone grabbing a whole bunch of superheroes and villains and saying, "Fight for my pleasure." But the 2015 Secret Wars is almost exactly that. It's actually one of the few storylines I kept up most with when I wasn't reading comics, because I heard about it. And I was like, ooh, that sounds cool. It wasn't as good as I had hoped from what I read. I didn't finish it, I'll be honest. But I'm going to have to... Now, after this, I'm going to have to go and reread and do a deep dive on that Secret Wars, because I definitely feel like that was just like my mind was like, when I saw that for the first time, I paused it and I had to walk away. I was like, no, there's no freaking way they just did that. But I'm getting off track a little bit. I'm really surprised that they went the first episode, they just dove right in, just basically blew all of our minds. And more on that, this is just the beginning of the mind blowing. I mean, it's pretty impressive what they were able to do in this one episode, but I do kind of hope that they do pull some events from, that 2015 storyline. Because I have quite a few like nice little comics from that run, so that make it more valuable. But definitely getting off track. So in the 2015 Secret Wars, all the universes, including the main 616 universe, which is the normal, the main continuity timeline, and the Ultimates universe, which was the 1610 universe, which is where a lot of characters were reimagined, and one of those characters just happens to be Miles Morales, and that's where he first appeared. So when all those universes collided and basically destroyed everything, the Marvel Universe was destroyed, and Doctor Doom and Doctor Strange were able to save pieces of it and create what they called Battle World with the remnants of those other universes. And like I said, I'm going to have to do a deep, deep breakdown of the Secret Wars event at a later date. But in an oversimplification, it took like all these different versions of the heroes and places throughout all of the MCU continuity and threw them all together. Like, it had Miles Morales and Peter Parker talking to each other. It was a way to get all their different popular titles under one connected title. It was pretty cool for most part. Like I said, I didn't finish it. But I'm just saying, if they pull anything from that, I would love to see a live-action God Emperor Doom. Just saying. I mean, because I'm this would be many years. I'm about to make a prediction about that in a second. But if they introduce Doctor Doom in the next 2-3 years... and build him up to be this great supervillain, and then do the Secret Wars event. Oh my god! But like, I'm that one line for me. Like I said, literally sets up the Secret War event in the MCU in the future. And I would bet, and I'm gonna call it now, in about, let's say, 10 years. So what's 10 years from now? So it'd be 2031. The Russo brothers will return to direct. It might be a 3-part series, but at least 2-part Secret Wars MCU live action movie. I'm calling it now. And you know what? That might be the end. Like that might be the end of the universe as we know it. And 'cause that's the thing about the Marvel Universe in the comics as well as in the MCU. It can be reset. Like, an event can happen that destroys everything, and then it goes back to the beginning. And you can reboot it without, like, you know, waiting too long to actually do it, because it'll be part of the same story, just a new, like, it'd be the second, it'd be the next book in a series. But back to the Loki episode. The all-knowing timekeepers set up the TVA to keep the multiverse in a single timeline that they called the Sacred Timeline. And I can't help but notice that in the middle of the timekeeper, the middle timekeeper kind of looks like Kang. Just gonna throw that out there. I honestly don't know enough about these characters to make any kind of theories about who or what they really are, what they're up to. But I mean, I can't know everything. I'm sorry, guys. The Sacred Timeline is everyone's predestined lane. That whole stay in your lane. Yeah. That definitely applies here, because you don't want the TVA to have to erase you. In this reality, if you don't stay in your lane, you create an alternate timeline, creating what they call a Nexus event, branching off timelines, which could lead to infinite chaos unless corrected by the TVA. And, you know, something as simple as being late or as volatile as starting an uprising could result in a variant version of yourself. Now, the implications of that are just almost too much to even comprehend. This means that the TVA has orchestrated events and clipping off alternate timelines to get to the point we are now in the MCU. That being said, every single person who blames Star-Lord for the events of Endgame and the death of Tony Stark now need to apologize to Mr. Lord, because if that wasn't exactly how it was supposed to happen, the TVA would have stepped in and corrected the timeline. Chris Pratt? Anyone who talks shit to you about what happened in Avengers Infinity War deserves to give you an apology. Flat out. Now, I also want to point out that it's been confirmed that Wanda is a Nexus being. That would imply to me that she would be able to transverse both time and travel in and or space and time in the entire multiverse, which I think will come into play in Doctor Strange 2. Doctor Strange, Into the Multiverse of Madness. Loki, of course, being Loki, calls it all a lie. And then Martin is asked about a ticket, which he didn't take. He then tries to blame someone else to no avail, and a Minuteman uses his time staff and basically erase him from existence, which I think is what they later will be referred to as being reset. the fear returns to Loki as he fumbles around for his ticket in his pocket. Again, props to Hiddleston for his acting here. That really, he just delivers in every scene of this episode. That final shot at 12 minutes is when the title card first airs. And right now I'm at 30 minutes, so it's double the time. Awesome! And you get the title card. And I love the theme song. And the cycling logo, by the way, is really awesome. All right. Let's see if I can get this right. So we cut back to a different part of the time stream. Oh, man. Eigen? I can't do it. It's spelled AIX-EN-province. It's somewhere in France. I don't speak French. And I know I just absolutely butchered it. I apologize. But it's in France in 1549. And we get our first appearance of Mobius M. Mobius and a group of Minutemen and a hunter there. And they see a cataclysmic scene where a bunch of their TVA employees were killed. And they make the point to say that they think it's the same person who's been attacking them. They agree that the stab wounds are consistent. And we all know who uses daggers, but more on that at the end. The killer also took the reset charge, and Hunter U-92, played by the imposing Derek Russo, says this is the sixth attack. So the killer has six reset charges. It appears that they're gathering reset charges, and I would guess that they have some nefarious plan to put a whole bunch of them together to destroy the TVA and the Sacred Timeline by triggering them all at once at a focal point in the multiverse. But we'll see if that is the case later on in the series. And then a random kid shows up. And we find out that all the hunters and employees of the TVA, it appears, speak all the languages in the timeline. Which is kind of crazy. Because think about it. That's not just on Earth. That would be on every planet throughout the universe. Just saying. When Mobius walks up to the kid, there's this stained glass window of a devil character. Yep. That's it, people. It's confirmed. 100%. No questions asked. Mephisto! Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, this is not Mephisto at all. While I do very much believe that he is actually he already is in the MCU. We just haven't seen him yet. Because he's definitely going to show up, in my opinion. I mean, this is just not the place for it. That image for me is Loki, the green-clad devil. And Loki is kind of a Lucifer-type archetype. He's the son of an all-powerful god who's cast out of paradise for his transgressions and trying to steal the throne. I mean, but definitely think that Mephisto is going to eventually show up because there's rumors that Ghost Rider is going to come out soon, possibly as early as the Multiverse of Madness. And there's a Midnight Suns movie or series in the works as well, from what I've been hearing. So I definitely think that's going to happen. Now, that device that Mobius uses to draw that stick figure is basically the standard thing that the timekeepers, the TVA seem to have. And I just don't understand why they would even have that function on it. Like, to me, that's just, like, weird. Like, why would you need the ability to draw a stick figure that can, like, come to life? But it's cool, but whatever. So let's talk about this kid. I personally think that it may actually be Kid Loki. One of my personal Nerdtween theories is that Kid Loki is the main villain, and he has somehow convinced the Lady Loki to help him destroy the Sacred Timeline, because as our Loki would say later in the episode, he walks the path that he chooses, and not because the TVA allows it, or because that's his he decides where he goes. I know this is a reach, but, and I want to be clear, as I said, I'm not declaring that this is him, unless it totally turns out to be him. In that case, yes, you heard it here first on the Between the Movie podcast. No, just kidding. But moving on. Hunter U-92 says the timelines are almost redlined. Excuse me. And they have to go. I'm taking that to mean that if they don't fix it in that time, within that certain timeline, it becomes like a point of no return that will eventually just break reality. But we shall see moving forward. Before they leave, the kid smiles and shows his teeth that are blue. And when Mobius asks him what it is, he hands him Kablooey, which is like looks like a gum. There says there's 9 units in there. It looks like it's some kind of candy or gum. Mobius wants him to run a scan for sequence period and or temporal aura, even though he's told that it's probably pointless. Just saying, wouldn't Loki, who always thinks he's 10 steps ahead of everyone, have to show up at the crime scene and taunt the lead investigator? Just saying. Also, I just love Owen Wilson as this compassionate, like, investigator type. Like, seeing the good in people, like, no matter what, before they can set the reset charge, a door opens up, and Mobius is handed a file of the apprehended Loki. And we see that Loki is gender fluid. Now, apparently, some people are up in arms about this. Like, oh, it's so sacrilegious, blah, blah, blah. Okay, first of all, that's just stupid. For so many reasons. But the biggest reason is the fact that Lady Loki is a character that has appeared in the comics. Now, there is some debate as to when the character first appeared. Some say it's Venus number 6 in 1948, which, for me, is wrong for two reasons. According to Marvel.com, the comic guest stars Loki in a, quote, pre-Marvel appearance. Therefore, that makes it not a Marvel appearance and not indeed the character's first appearance, because it didn't happen in the Marvel continuity or under the Marvel brand, really. And number two, because Team Franklin Fitness on Instagram agrees with me that Thor number 5 in 2008 is the actual first appearance. So I just recently acquired the J. Scott Campbell variant cover. So you definitely guys might want to follow my Whatnot account, NerdTween, because that may become available real, real soon. But we cut back to Loki brought before a judge. Loki Laufeyson variant L1130 is charged with sequence violation 7289, which, after all the research I did, the only thing I can think of that it could possibly be is a reference to Thor 405, which came out in July of 1989, which had an appearance of Annihilus, who is a big bad on par with Thanos, and is considered a universal threat by the Nova Corps. But that is basically the closest thing I could find. So unless Marvel is just messing with us at this point, that may be the first Annihilus Easter egg we've had in the MCU. But that'd be messed up. So messed up. Like, hey guys, like picture the writing room. Hey guys, you want to see me make these nerds go crazy? How are you going to do that? Throw a number there. Just throw any number. No. Throw a number that could be used to look like a date, and that's attached to some random comic, and let's just see them theorize themselves to death. Not cool. Loki, back to the show. Loki's in the court. Well, he was the vintage Loki, literally asking the same questions I posed on my preview episode. Like, how is Loki the one that broke reality? Excuse me. When the only reason he was able to get it in the first place is because the Avengers time heist meddling and subsequent failure. Judge Renslayer, who is likely Ravonna Renslayer, who is a character in the comics who, as I said on my previous episode, is the love interest of Kang. Watching it, Jonathan Majors is going to show up somewhere in here. Just saying. But I digress. She says the Avengers were supposed to do that. He was not supposed to escape, further solidifying the statement that Star-Lord is not to blame for anything that happened in Endgame. Hey, that rhymes. That was exactly what was supposed to happen. Just saying. He even calls the Avengers time criminals that he could lead a task force to take care of them. Then he tries to use his magic and he just can't. And then she's just showing the outstanding range of Hiddleston with his hilarious attempts and subsequent meltdown. Like, it's just the show has everything that you could look for, including the comedy and emotional scenes that we'll talk about in a second. Loki is being sentenced to being reset. Of course, he fights it in Loki fashion, saying that he even goes to threaten them, basically saying that they're not going to decide his fate. And he goes, "You have no idea what I'm capable of." Then Mobius interjects, "I think I might know what he's capable of." And again, here's this new wave of the MCU that is hilarious without telling jokes, but just by these great writers and actors just absolutely crushing it. Mobius sees something in this Loki variant and has a funny exchange with the judge. He says he has to talk to her. He's going to talk to her from on the elevated bench. He comments, "I feel like I'm always looking up to you. I like it. It's appropriate." God, I love Owen Wilson. The chemistry between Wilson and Hiddleston is just nothing short of spectacular. They just play off each other so well, and just two great actors just doing work. When Loki looks out at the TVA landscape, he immediately says, "I thought there was no magic here." And then Mobius says, "There's not. It's just a wondrous sight to see that whole construct they have there." And we keep seeing, you know, Timekeeper, like statues and stuff in their artwork and the constructs of their walls. This time, monument style, holding up what I'm guessing is like the command center. Some have postulated that the city here was seen in the quantum realm. I don't think that's right. But we'll see. Moving on. Loki questioned if it was real and stated that this place was a nightmare. Mobius says there's another department and he will help Loki burn that one down. Okay, I really hope that was a joke, because if there was a department like the TVA for dreams and nightmares, that would mean that every nightmare you ever had was planned by them to elicit some type of reaction before I... Before I tumble down that rabbit hole like Alice, let's move on. Mobius and Loki recount his exploits in Avengers, and he keeps asking him the tough questions. Do you enjoy hurting people? Making them feel small? Making them feel little? Loki says, "I know what I am." More on that later. Who goes, "What, a murderer? A liberator." Of eyes, maybe. Then he shows him the clip of him getting the eye for Clint to break into that science lab to get the iridium that Eric Selvig needed to create the machine to open the portal to let the Chitauri in Avengers. He then points out the smile that he had on his face, proving that he enjoyed it. Loki states that he is the god, and Mobius points out, "Yeah, the god of mischief, but what you've been doing, none of this really seems mischievous." He points out that Loki is really good at doing bad stuff and getting away. And then this is an obvious reason that Mobius wants to get this variant to help them, because of what we'll learn later in the episode. We find out the MCU Loki is D.B. Cooper. Apparently, he lost a bet with Thor, and that's why he had to do that. I will admit, I'm really glad that that wasn't, like, something he ended up having to do with the TVA to set something right in the timeline, because I thought that was going to be really off-putting, and I saw that in the trailers. I got a little worried, I have to admit. But I'm glad that it was done very, very well. And then one of the best scenes in the entire episode, Loki says, "Enough!" And he gets up, and then Mobius uses the time twist to put him back in the seat. He goes, "I can play the heavy keys too." And Loki responds with, "I was just standing up to make a point." And then Mobius is, okay, go ahead. And Loki, I mean, it was great. It won't be as meaningful now. And every time I watch that scene, I just bust out laughing. And I doing these breakdowns, you can't just watch it one time. I probably watched this first episode about 20 or so times just to get this breakdown. And, you know, I still probably missed a whole bunch too. So, I'm no Michael Roman from Everything Always or, God, what's the guy from New Rock Stars? I can't think of his name all of a sudden. But I'm not them yet. I'm working on it. We'll see. Loki asked him, what does he want from him? And the Mobius says, and this is actually a really honest answer, but doesn't seem like it, especially because Loki doesn't trust anyone, and the fact that in most scenarios, Loki would be right in feeling this way, but he calls him a liar. And if you think about it, he says, seriously, All I seek is a deeper understanding of the fearsome god of mischief. And like I said, it sounds like a lie, something to butter up Loki so he will cooperate. But later we find out Mobius is really telling the truth here. Loki, in frustration, says he knows what this place is. It's an illusion, a cruel, elaborate trick, conjured by the weak to inspire fear, a desperate attempt at control. Remember that for later. Loki questions the power of the TVA, and he says that they parade around like the divine arbiters of power in the universe. To which Mobius says, they are. And he's not wrong, and Loki will soon realize that in a little bit. Loki starts to berate Mobius, and the TVA calls them pathetic and irrelevant, a detour. He is projecting hard here, for the record. Mobius shows him what was supposed to happen if he would have led the right way on that timeline instead of escaping after the Battle of Avengers. He says they know how his entire life is supposed to play out. He shows Loki the events of Thor: The Dark World, where Frigga gets killed, and it was basically his fault. Mobius just pushes all of Loki's buttons here. Tells him he wasn't born to be a king. He was born to cause pain and suffering and death, and so that others can achieve the best versions of themselves. And he shows him a clip from the projector, which again looks really low tech, but is clearly more advanced than anything we've ever seen as of today. The scene he shows him is of the Avengers assembling in the first Avengers movie. They are interrupted by Hunter B-15, leaving Loki alone. While her and Mobius are outside talking about how they lost another team, that's now 7 units, Loki escaped using the time twister he lifted from Mobius, kind of proving that he is kind of a mischievous little scamp. Now, if you look closely, when Loki appears on another level, you can see what looks like Peggy Carter being escorted through by somebody in the TVA. Now, some have postulated that maybe that is the What If version that we will see in the animated What If series, where Peggy Carter becomes Captain Britain. Or maybe just another one. Or it's just another one of those things to drive us nerds crazy. Moving on. Loki finds Casey again and threatens to gut him like a fish. And it's funny because Casey doesn't know what a fish is, because he's lived his entire life behind that desk. So does that mean the TVA just created all these people? Ah! The implications! This scene right here just straight up warps our perspective on the MCU to date. Loki demands a Tesseract, and then when he hands it over, Loki sees in a drawer what looks to be about 13 assorted Infinity Stones. And Casey says, how do you have these? Casey says, oh, we have a lot of them. Some of the guys use them as paperweights. Excuse me, what? That hurt. Because that just basically discredited everything we've seen up to this point. Like, all those sacrifices. Like, oh, man. Back to the episode. Now that I had my own moment, Loki has a moment where he realizes that even Infinity Stones have no power here. And that sudden moment of clarity, again, Hiddleston just should be praised left, right, up, down, sideways for his acting ability here. He managed to display the look of a man that has had his entire understanding of the universe just shattered. The realization that even he, the literal god of mischief, is powerless compared to the TVA. The music here also just really drives that home. I think it's pretty much violins with some other sound effects. It just amplifies the effects, the emotional impact of that scene. He even says, is this the greatest power in the universe? And then here, Hunter B-15 shows up again and tries to reset Loki with a powerful swing of her time staff. And he escapes by using the time twister, and she almost hits Casey. And then he says, as she chases away after Loki, that he doesn't forgive her. And I agree. If anything happens to Casey, we riot! Just saying, I'm rioting if anything happens to that amazing character. And you know what? I bet because I said that, someone's going to break in the TVA and kill his ass. Watch. Damn it. I just killed Casey. Shit. Loki returns to the interrogation room where he takes control of the projector. He sits there for a second, mourns his mother's death, starts crying. Then he watches the scene with where Odin calls him his son and dies. And then again, Hiddleston just crushing it. Breaks down in full-on tears as he watches. Then he sees the heart-to-heart conversation with Thor in the elevator in Ragnarok. He sees him standing alongside Thor and Valkyrie. He sees that Thor saw the good in him. Then he fasts forward to his death at the hands of Thanos. Hiddleston here is just a master of his craft. When he watches himself die, the exasperation of and mixture of feelings, just you can see it wash over him. Think about how you would feel if you watched yourself get killed. Think about that. Like, think of the mind-blowing ramifications of that sentence. Watched yourself be murdered. That should be impossible. And here Loki's doing it. Also, I would like to point out that this scene officially 100% confirms that he did, in fact, die in the end of Infinity War. And apparently people were still debating that somehow to this day. I don't know. Moving on. Hunter B-15 walks in as Loki is hysterically laughing because he realizes that everything he knew is basically a lie. Glorious purpose, he chuckles. Loki shows how formidable he can be going hand-to-hand, getting her to move at the exact spot that he wants so he could get the collar off himself and onto her. He then proceeds to torture her for a little bit in a never-ending, ridiculous cycling time loop. And then we cut to Casey, you know, he's walking and recounting the exploits of Hunter B-15 pruning his cart to what I'm guessing are, like, supervisors. When she appears in front of him and then he just, hey, yeah, by the way, that variant got away. then we cut back to Loki still sitting in that room, just defeated. Mobius walks in. He says, now nowhere left to run. But Loki isn't running anymore. He's realizing that he's stuck. And he even says, I can't go back to my timeline, can I? He admits that he doesn't enjoy hurting people, but he says he does it because he has to, or had to. When Mobius goes, okay, explain that to me. He repeats the bit from earlier. Because it's a part of illusion. It's the cruel, elaborate trick to conjured by the weak to inspire fear. That was okay. Mobius responds, a desperate play for control. You do know yourself. And Loki says, yeah, I'm a villain. Mobius says, I don't see it that way. And then, you know, Loki picks up the Tesseract. Mobius says, you know, have you tried to use that? And he admits he tried to do it numerous times. And then he just says, even an Infinity Stone is useless here. So, and that also confirms that he knew that Tesseract was an Infinity Stone back in the Avengers. He didn't just think it was just some cube. And because this is literally the Loki that was about to be transported to Asgard after he was defeated in the events of Avengers, the very first Avengers movie. Then he goes, Mobius tells him that the reason why he can help him, he can't offer him a redemption, but maybe something better. He says, Mobius tells him the fugitive variant that is killing all of the men and women is a variant. The variant question is Loki. And of course, our Loki looks shocked. He's like, in disbelief, he truly believed he was one of a kind. Then we cut to Salina, Oklahoma in 1858. Again, I dug. There was a battle with Native Americans there. I mean, it's basically all I could find. And I don't, I don't see how any way it could tie into what's going on here. So I don't know. But there has to be a reason for it. But we'll probably find that out later. Yeah, so the TVA show up, and they're just basically saying it's just a regular, you know, time-traveling jerk trying to get rich, going back in time. There's this, like, high-tech shovel, like, object stuck in the ground. They scan it. It says it's a time signature of the early third millennia, which would put it sometime around now, because the third millennia is from the year 2001 to the year 3000. They say it's anachronistic, which means belonging to a period other than that being portrayed. So basically it's an object from the future that in respects to the time they're in. They decide it's not worth the paperwork to try and capture the culprit. So they just, you know, they just want to reset the charge, do a reset charge, and just get out of there. But before they can do that, they see a hooded figure in the dark. This figure throws a lantern on the ground and catches the oil field on fire. And just before the hunter can get to the reset charge, gets pulled off screen, and the killer takes the charge. So this is obviously the Loki variant that they were talking about. I'm betting it's Lady Loki. And I'm so glad I picked up that Thor issue. So some nerd-tween theory about what will come next, I have no freaking idea. I mean, where do they go from here? I mean, they just, like, said that Infinity Stones are paperweights. Like, I don't know where it's going. I mean, I've already predicted that there may be, like, Jonathan Majors might show up before he, like, turns, like, full Kang. Or after, considering the fact that he'd have multiple versions of himself throughout the timeline. Okay, crazy. I'm going crazy. Stop. Reel it back in. Okay. Or maybe All Black, the Necrosword, because we know, confirm 100%, that we're getting Gore the God Butcher. And I truly believe Null down the line. I feel like, I don't know if Null was specifically created to enter the MCU, but the way they did it, to me, feels like it was meant. It's going to be in the MCU, but that'll be a long time from now. All right. So, and I also still hold fast that we're going to get Kid Loki in the show, and I hope so because I got that issue too. Also, it's really, if you let the credits run at just over minute 50, and I'm at 58 right now. It's interesting. Miss Minute comes on and says, "Thanks for stopping by the." Stopping by and let us know how we're doing. That was super creepy, especially when you're not expecting it. So, wow. There was so much to break down this episode. And I want to say, if you made it to the 58 and a half minute mark that we're at right now, I just want to say thank you. You are the real deal MVPs. And I want you to do me a favor. Send me a DM at either Nerdpool Reborn or Marvel2K21 on Instagram, and I'm going to give you guys a huge shout-out. Because, yeah, we're about an hour in for a show that was only 47 minutes. So I did a real deep dive for you guys. And then I just, again, wanted to say thank you so much for listening. Over the past few weeks, I have received a lot of positive feedback. And it's really, really motivating me to push further and push harder. And I've got some really great stuff in the works. You guys are definitely going to want to like, share, subscribe, tell everyone, because I got some stuff in the works that's going to change the Nerdtween planet forever. So that being said, it's been almost an hour. You guys have been amazing. Thank you so much. This is your host, Nerdpool Prime, signing off.